Hello and welcome to this audio on governance. Governance on major projects, which of course includes transformations, is rarely addressed as a separate issue. Instead, people seem to think that somehow management is going to keep the lid on things. I want us just to think about this for a moment, and so to begin, I'm going to talk briefly about a massive failure of governance in two different places. The first one was Crossrail, which was a long-intended project to connect the east and the west of London by a direct fast train link. Starting and ending above ground, it was going to tunnel under central London, connecting to existing stations on the surface at various points. It suffered massive delays and budget hikes in the period after it finally began construction. Despite the protestations of management that delays in a civil engineering project on such a scale were inevitable, I disagree. And it was the failure of governance that allowed things to spiral out of control. Even the senior civil servant overseeing the programme clearly hadn't a clue. He was buried in a way of thinking that assumed that what had been done was pretty much the only way and that lessons would be learned for the future. This last bit was ironic because they clearly hadn't learned any lessons from past mistakes on other big programmes like the Channel Tunnel and the high-speed rail link into London. There were a great number of things that actually went badly wrong. For instance, the dependencies between various items were badly managed. Here's an example of the stupidity. During one phase, contractors were told they might have access to certain stations from 11 p.m, whereas in practice these often weren't freely available until an hour or so later because of some little incident or other that meant the station hadn't been cleared. This resulted in knock-on delays, and for every delay, hundreds of contractors were being paid to stand around and do nothing. That was cost incurred for no benefit whatsoever. You might wonder why anybody would set up a schedule for work that was so inflexible as to lead to this problem. I can only say that it demonstrates a terrible failing of the governance structure. You see, if you have good governance, then things like this get questioned before they're allowed to go ahead. What should have happened is that the stations were told to be clear by 11 p.m. and the contractors told that they could start at midnight. That would have left sufficient gap to cover eventualities in most cases. Then someone should have planned some time slots to catch up any work that had overflowed. It isn't rocket science to work these things out. Instead, everything was left on a critical path, and that is simply idiotic in a programme of this scale. Other failings with Crossrail included considerable changes to design and specification. Sometimes multiple changes at one site resulting in work being done, then undone, then redone. What a mess. Frankly, it's the job of those overseeing governance to ensure that design changes are kept to the absolute minimum once things are underway. As you go through the module, you will see how and where those controls can be put in place and how they will operate to keep things in check. It isn't just civil engineering that gets a bad press. I remember being asked to sit in on a post-implementation review for a large financial services business. They had run a very big programme to connect their entire office network across the UK with fibre optics to upgrade the IT connectivity. There were literally hundreds of sites involved. It had been a very good idea at the time, and yet it turned out the whole programme had overrun by 18 months. And again, the reason was that in the original planning, nobody had left any slack time between each little project. There were typically a few days or weeks to connect one building or another before the installation team moved on to the next site. It doesn't take a super brain to work out that with no slack in the schedule, every little delay is going to accumulate and is likely to cause other problems along the way. When I asked the project manager if he had asked permission to overrun, he looked utterly bemused. He actually said, "Why should I ask permission? We were given the go-ahead to do the project." What he clearly failed to comprehend was that when the board of directors had given the green light, they had in mind a business case and some expectation of benefits. I pointed out that he had just driven a coach and horses through that expectation, and the lost benefits of the 18 months presumably added up to quite a lot. I asked if he had been given the sack for the incompetence. I actually told him that I would have fired him years before. What I found even more amazing was that three directors, including the IT director, who were in the room attending the same review, just sat with their mouths wide open when I pointed out the failing. In my view, they equally should have been sacked for not doing their jobs properly. After all, they were supposedly in a governing role to make sure things happened according to the plan that had been agreed. As for the delays, if the board had been consulted, they might have allocated more resource to get things back on schedule. Who knows? Since they were kept in the dark, they were simply frustrated that the delays and the expected benefits simply went down the drain. Now, think back to the beginning of this audio. There I pointed out that governance is rarely dealt with as a separate issue. So let me explain why you really need to spend some time getting the right and appropriate governance structures in place. I don't believe in building bureaucratic structures, but I do believe in making sure that the right people are getting to make the right decisions. In order for that to happen, people need to know what is being proposed, how it is all expected to fit together, and where the levers of control are going to sit to make sure that someone, like the idiot project manager running the fibre programme, doesn't just do their own thing without any oversight. Believe me when I tell you that it's my experience that proper governance is universally ignored. Instead, people have committees and boards that discuss endlessly but fail to make decisions and keep things under control. You might think I'm being cynical, but actually, only a few days before recording this, I was talking over dinner to a consultant from Canada, and she was saying pretty much the same thing. It's truly awful, and one of the reasons why big programmes of change simply don't deliver. Things can get so out of control that they are cancelled because the costs have spiralled out of sight, or an end date cannot be determined. Then there are the vanity projects that are pursued by one powerful player at the expense of lots of good things. With good governance procedures in place, even these can be nipped in the bud at an early stage. You see, great governance ensures objectivity. With that comes dispassionate decision making and a clear view of what is being authorised and what is being held back. Yet in your transformation, I bet there are people, possibly it's yourself, who want something to happen so much they will do almost anything to keep it going. Well, being passionate about getting a particular thing to happen is okay, as long as you have already worked out that it is the right solution to the right problem. However, even then you need to make certain that you don't stray off track. As you will see over the course of this module, there are lots of things you can do to keep things well under control, and actually doing them isn't that hard. So what does this mean? Before you really get going with the delivery of your transformation, you should also put in place the governance structures and reporting. Whatever else you do, don't leave these to the last minute. I've seen so many ad hoc attempts at governance that haven't been thought through, and they never work. One problem you're almost certain to encounter is resistance from the people. Why do we have to do all this stuff? Can't we just do the things in the plans? Those sorts of cries are commonplace. My answer is simple. We're doing the governance because it makes everyone's life easier. Things will stay on track. Resources won't get wasted. Work won't have to be redone. A clear vision of where things are going will be available all the time. And for some people, that can be a revelation. It will also allow people space to bring up issues before they cause disaster. Overall, it isn't necessarily what a project is doing, but rather how it is being done that can cause chaos. Governance stops chaos at the door and keeps it out. And don't kid yourself that yours is a special case. It isn't. If you don't put proper governance in place, then you are deliberately wasting resources, but you won't know how much that waste is going to cost you until it is far too late to prevent it happening. So don't fall into the trap. Make sure you get this bit firmly nailed. One last thing though, don't be afraid of governance. It isn't hard to do well, and the components are relatively straightforward. So you'll be fine as long as you work through the various bits and make sure you put them all in place. I've also found that once the teams get used to the process, they love it, because all of a sudden they find they are not under threat. Instead, it is seen as a collaborative effort to make sure things work. Too often, junior staff working on projects are afraid of being blamed for things going wrong. However, with a good governance structure in place, they start to find that they get support to avert disaster and recognition of the hard work that they put in to make things succeed. That's all from me for now. Thanks for listening and work steadily through the remaining sessions in the module. Don't forget that at any stage, if you are finding things are difficult, all you have to do is book in a call and we can talk them through with you. That's part of the governance to keep you on track. Simple, really.